Welcome to Sestercast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Kathy Campbell. Hey, Kathy, how are you doing?
Hi, Jean. I'm doing absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic. Did you enjoy watching this week's episode?
I did, especially the first couple minutes.
Yes.
Where we find out that Kira is not actually dead.
Yes, that's very helpful to
a huge weight off my back. As witnessed by the last episode, I was traumatically altered from the ending.
I know.
And I even was affected with the previously on bit where they showed it again. And so it was a big relief to find out that not only was she not dead, but she pretty much healed herself.
Yes, and that's a really interesting twist, because this time when I was watching it, you know, they open with the emergency vehicle, the EMTs are in there saying all their EMT stuff,
right.
And one of them that I said, what does GCS stand for? Because the EMT said GCS3 to his, you know, on his walkie-talkie. And I was trying to think, because I know what GSW is from watching ER, is
right.
Gunshot wound. We know she wasn't shot by a gun. So GCS stands for the Glasgow Coma Scale. And it's apparently a widely used scale for conveying information about what state somebody who's been injured, severely injured, like Kira, what state they're in. And GCS3 is the worst. There is no GCS1 because they add up 3 points, whether their eyes open, whether they can speak, and whether they can move. So if you score 1, which is the lowest you can score on each of those 3, you get GCS3. So they were basically saying she's as bad as you can be, and she has a severe chest injury and potentially has internal bleeding. Then they get to the hospital, and they're working on her. And the first numbers they start shouting out, which again, from my vast emergency medical experience from watching ER all those seasons, I thought, those numbers aren't too bad.
Right? Like the blood pressure.
And the heart rate and things like that.
Yeah.
And then they just basically come out and say, hey, she's okay. Guess she was lucky. And only having looked up GCS3 do I realize, like, yes, they went from evaluating her as bad as you can be to basically she's ready to go home.
Yeah. It's funny because previous seasons, we'd been very Law and Order and like cop shows. And now we went into my second favorite type of, or an additional favorite type of show, which is the medical shows.
Yes.
So I'm like, I like how Orphan Black kind of covers all of the bases.
I know. And all that important stuff that we learned in all those seasons of watching those shows doesn't go to waste.
Exactly.
So, just checking in with you as a new watcher, you caught that they were saying she's basically healing herself.
Right.
It wasn't just a miracle or magic as you would normally think.
Right. Well, especially because in the show already, we have seen some pretty fantastical science
mm-hmm.
information. We learned, you know, they made clones, period. Like, mm-hmm. that's pretty scientific, not very magical. And just the strong science bent on it makes you automatically think, okay, something is going on with her physiology, especially on top of the fact that none of the other clones have children and that Allison couldn't have children.
Right.
And how amazed Delphine and Allison were that Kira had a birth child.
That Sarah had a birth child, but yes.
That Sarah, yes.
It's okay.
Who did I say?
Kira. It's no biggie, but you know, just another name to keep straight.
Yes, I know. That Kira was a birth child.
Well, it's something that didn't click for me in a couple of previous watchings that finally did, is that how Helena was badly stabbed with a piece of rebar in like episode 3 or 4, And she should have died, too.
Right. Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fine.
Semi-spoiler. Not a spoiler, but yeah, I'm curious.
No, that makes sense. So I wonder if, well, because that brings into account the Germans, like, respiratory issue, or was it actually a respiratory issue, or is Cosima just using that as a, like, fake thing to get people to test the stuff for her?
I think it's a respiratory issue, but I don't think we really know.
Okay.
But there's, like, bleeding and coughing of blood. And
at this point, even though they mostly tended to heal well, as witnessed by Helena, mm-hmm. they're not invincible.
Apparently not, right.
Okay.
We don't know how much longer Katya would have lived with her ailment because
right.
she got a bullet between the eyes thanks to
right. Helena. She was a little occupied.
Yeah. Cut short. Experiment cut short. Anyway.
Yes.
So we're happy. Obviously, we're happy Kira's still around because she's the most adorable. And I don't think the show could go on without her.
Oh, no. That, like, she would have died if it had been Game of Thrones. But thankfully, it's not Game of Thrones, yeah. So she lived.
Which is exactly why I don't watch Game of Thrones. Yeah, so Kira gets to come home, and she's back in her bedroom at Mrs. S's house. And Sarah, of course, is pacing.
I really liked the transition from the credits into being in Kira's room, mm-hmm. the light play and the focus, changing focus in the details in the room. It
yes.
really made you really concentrate. You could breathe again now that you knew that she was safe. And like it really transitioned into, okay, now we're going to get back to the story.
Yeah.
I thought that was well done.
yeah, I noticed that too, that really detailed artwork around the room, the mobile stuff and that was hanging from her ceiling. And for a second, I thought, where are we exactly? It has to be Kira's room, but I wondered.
Yes.
Yeah, so at the house, of course, there's Sarah and Felix and Mrs. S. Obviously, the family's been through a huge trauma and scare
right.
with Kira. And now Sarah is, like, thinking, I got to get rid of Helena. She's obviously dangerous to my family and to my kid. And that becomes a thread for this episode. What is Sarah going to do about Helena? Meantime, Helena is back in her lair, her freighter that she lives on with Thomas.
Right.
And she's devastated because, of course, she bonded with Kira in that very tender moment in the alley where Kira
yeah.
gave her a hug and took her seriously as a human being.
Well, and especially Sarah doesn't know that Helena let Kira go.
Right.
She doesn't. The audience knows, and the audience knows how touched Helena was. And so we can understand how angry Sarah is, but we're also not on the side of, yes, I agree, Helena needs to die. And I don't know if we want to talk about this now, but the main enemy in the show mm-hmm. keeps changing.
Yeah.
Who is considered evil, who is the bad guy. It changes.
That's a good point.
So like at the closer to the beginning, we were like, oh, Olivier, he's the bad guy. But then you learn, not really. He's just kind of, he's not as evil as he seemed.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's, you know, lecherous and doing things, but he's also not as smart as we originally thought.
Right.
And Helena, you know, she's terrible. She's going around. She's killing all these clones. Like, what a horrible person. But her humanity is coming out, and her personality and her personage and the fact that she's, like, loves Kira so much.
Yeah.
And now you feel for her, where the beginning of the show, you know, the first couple episodes, there's no way I would have been like, oh, poor Helena.
Yeah.
So that was That was something I noticed, especially with this episode, and how that changes and has changed.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think this is the most we get to see of Tomas with Helena, you know, really just, first of all, badgering her. Why didn't she bring Kira back to him? Why hasn't she killed Sarah? And Helena's like, Kira's innocent. And Tomas is, he loses it with her, with Helena. He takes away the letter that Kira had written to Sarah that Helena had been treasuring. And he throws her into a cage.
Yeah.
And that is one of the most difficult scenes to watch, I would say. It's some of the most amazing acting from Tatiana Maslany, that animal like way of throwing herself against being caged up and really just crazy, going crazy.
Yeah, like full body, the epitome of an emotional and like physical freak out.
Right.
Because I'm guessing this has happened before. She knows what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
She knows what's going to happen in the future. And now she's freaking out, not just for herself, but because she knows Kira is not safe.
Right.
And I think she may have freaked out more than she did in the past because she had someone else to live for, type of a thing.
That's right.
And has kind of opened up to the world, you know, having met Sarah and known that she's not this terrible person. So she's starting to question everything that she knows. Whereas before, I can imagine that she probably would have gone into the cage by herself if Tomas asked her to, because she had that complete trust that he knows best and that he's doing it for their own good or whatever. But now she's just like, no, the truth that you're telling me is not the real truth.
I also think it's interesting how this cage is so small. You know, it's not like being locked up in a cell. It's being locked up like you're going into a crate like an animal.
Yeah.
And that fits well with the Helena being, you know, they talk about her being feral, in fact.
Right.
Dr. Leakey, there's a little scene with Dr. Leakey and Paul where Dr. Leakey says, come on, I know that it wasn't Helena who was pretending to be Beth, because there's no way she could pull that off and fool you as a girlfriend and as a cop. Yeah, there's no way that Helena could pretend to be Beth successfully over time.
Right.
We know that Helena did once pretend to be Beth in the police station, and it was very funny, but that wouldn't have lasted for very long.
No, there's no way anyone, like, she didn't ever meet up with Art
or right.
even DeAngelis, right. just the poor, naive tech.
Oh, yeah. Poor guy. Raj. I know. Poor Raj. I guess he's been fired by now. We haven't seen him.
Probably. Or because Beth isn't there, he hasn't played a part in the investigation.
That could be true.
Yeah, she just couldn't do it.
Yeah. So as Leakey says, you know, she's feral. She couldn't have fooled you, but Sarah could. And that leads to now Sarah's going to be balancing two fronts of enemies, as you might say, or villains, because Paul now knows that Leakey knows that Sarah is not Beth.
Right.
Or Sarah exists, and it's that Beth wasn't Helena. So one of my favorite little bits is Paul comes to Mrs. S's house. Sarah answers the door. She greets him, and then she introduces him to S and says, you know, this is Paul. And then pointing to S, she says, this is S. She knows everything. And S, just her eyes light up, like looking at this super handsome guy who's just walked in, who's obviously clearly under Sarah's spell. And she says, well, not everything, clearly.
And her face was just, I mean, once again, the fantastic acting skills of Maria Doyle Kennedy. Because you can just see, like, oh, really now? Who is this? Because he's put together. He's obviously not a, well, he could have been a drug addict, but he's not like Vic.
Right.
He's not like any of the other people, including Kira's father, that has been around, whoever Kira's father is.
Mm.
So, like, it's a major bonus. And so, of course, she's going to be excited.
Yeah, like a proud mother, like, oh, she finally found a good, finally found a nice boy to take care of her.
Yes.
So now this introduces, like, basically what becomes a trade-off between Leaky and Helena, and what is she going to do? Because Leaky wants to meet up with Sarah. Of course, she doesn't want to do it, but Paul says, what if I can set it up so it's on your terms? And of course, he's Mr. Black Ops. So that means you just have to have a blindfold to bring somebody from point A to point B. And then it's really, right. really secret.
I laugh so much at that, too, especially in. But, you know, I can kind of see it. It's a city that Dr. Leaky isn't necessarily home at.
Yeah.
Like, it's not his home base.
I guess so. Come on. Don't try to rationalize this show when it's bad.
Come on. It's Paul. He's a black ops, like, super wizard. He's fine. He's got this.
For all we know, Leaky has some kind of GPS implant. It wouldn't be right. his first implant.
To be honest, though, even if he did know where it was, because it was a pretty much a safe generic location,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not anyone's home.
That's true.
So it really doesn't matter
right.
if Dr. Leaky knows where they are, so much as Paul being in charge.
Yes. All right. I will not cast aspersions on the abilities of your black ops boyfriend.
I know. Don't be dissing. Do not be dissing my Paul.
All right.
That's all I'm going to say.
It was a good visual. Paul driving Leaky somewhere with a blindfold and taking
with a scarf, not even a real blindfold, but his scarf.
And Sarah meets Leaky, and he tries to convince her, "You should bring Helena in. She's under the guise of these people who call themselves the Prolethians." And Sarah gets in a dig and says, like, oh, much worse than Neolutionist.
Yes.
And basically setting up the big question, which is, which one scares you more? And he makes a kind of good case that with the Prolethians, obviously, Helena's been completely screwed up. And the Neolutionists have incentive to take care of her because she's one of their valuable clones.
And in that same conversation, like when Sarah, you know, asked for more details on what the whole scheme was, and we find out that Dr. Leaky says he only knows his part. He oversees data collection and quantify your well-being. So the Neolutionists, at least, or whoever made the clones, I'm not going to confirm because obviously I don't know, but at this point, you think it's the Neolutionists. They, A, care about their well-being
mm-hmm.
enough to want to quantify it and track it, but they also seem to be more hands-off. We've seen the conversations with at least Paul as a monitor to, like, not become involved, to not, like, affect the change so much
right.
as be there and see how they live. Whereas the Prolethians have done kind of the exact opposite to make Helena their, like, battle dog hunter person.
Yeah. I think, and in that conversation where Leaky says, you know, we want to help her deprogram her, and says, you and your friends can have your lives back. And Sarah says, you'll give us our lives. And Leaky says, you've always had lives. They haven't been directed, just observed.
Yes.
Like Oh, no biggie. You were just observed down to, you know, the medical level where we were sending teams in while you were asleep and collecting data. But that's not invasive or disturbing.
No, it doesn't affect your well-being as a human being or your lifing.
So basically now Sarah has to decide if she's going to bring in Helena, because Helena wants to see her. Helena wants to hear if Kara is okay. And so Helena and Sarah finally connect on via the phone, which has been hard because Tomas locked Helena in a cage. So Helena wasn't able to get to the phone. But once she calms down, she gets into, you know, really a crafty Helena mode and figures out how to get her purse or whatever that has the phone with her shoelace and her belt. And once she has the phone and she and Sarah can connect, Sarah's on her way over to see Helena. And she sneaks a gun out. I think it's Paul's gun, and goes on her own. And I'm thinking, once again, Paul is there. He's supposed to be protecting Sarah. And all she has to do is kind of like turn around and like sort of walk out the door while nobody is looking.
Right? He's not doing a really good job. Let's just be honest here. I love me some Paul, but, you know, he's playing the dutiful boyfriend and talking to Mrs. S and, you know, doing what when you bring home a boyfriend to mom, like, gotta impress mom. That's the important part type of a thing.
Helena says to Sarah, you know, you're the only one I can really turn to. And Sarah does get to the freighter, down to the cage. And Sarah's, you know, Helena's like, how is Kira? And Sarah says, you're never going to see her again. And Helena says, I wish I could believe you. And then she holds a gun to Helena's head. So here's the first option, is she could just kill Helena and be done with her. And Helena very poignantly says, do it, because on some level, you know, all this torture for Helena would be some, I can only imagine that she wouldn't on some level like to be done with it.
Yeah. I really, the face of resignation.
Yeah.
That she wasn't going to get to know more about Kira. She wasn't going to have the connection that she wanted. And so in order to keep everyone safe, she's kind of like, okay, fine, do it. Mm-hmm. I know you're angry. I know you're pissed. I know that, like, this quote-unquote family that has raised me since I was little is going to make me try and kill you. And more importantly, try and take Kira. So yes, do it.
But then, of course, Sarah doesn't. She backs off and Helena's like, oh, you care. And Sarah says, no, I don't. Stay back. You know, don't try any stuff. Helena, it's just so touching. It was similar to the scene with Kira. It's like, you're all I have now. And she comes, like, she's just coming in for a hug. And you can see Sarah just can't move away.
Yes.
She's like, wants to back off, but she also can't stop Helena from hugging her.
Well, and especially, you know, that Sarah is not exactly an emotionally touching type person.
Right.
She wouldn't go in for hugs for a lot of people.
Right.
And she's making herself stay. And it was really funny. I laughed.
Then Tomas comes in and Helena grabs the gun. And then you have the scene that's really brilliantly put together of Tomas on one side of Helena and Sarah on the other. And Tomas saying, like, hey, you know, you are the light. You're the original. And as the original, you are Kira's rightful mother, which was such a mean thing to say.
Well, and so manipulative and brilliant in his side, because he's seen how Kira has affected her.
Yeah.
He's seen what it's made her feel and what it made her willing to do. And so, yeah, he needs to keep control of his charge. And in order to do that as well, he needs to make sure he doesn't get shot.
Right.
So he's going to say whatever he wants. And on the one hand, Sarah is like, she's trying to calm Helena down,
mm-hmm.
as well as get Tomas away from Helena and like stop him from saying the things that he's been saying.
I mean, Sarah says, you know, that connection between us, I feel it too. And to Helena. And
yes,
she says, everything he's done to you, he's going to do to Kira. And that makes Helena snap. And she doesn't need the gun anymore. Sarah slips it out of her hand and Helena just pounds the guy.
I love it. She was so angry at Tomas and that she didn't want to just shoot him. She wanted to beat him up by hand and then put him in the cage.
Yes.
Like, to make him pay.
Right. And so, you know, that the scene wraps up with Tomas is now in the cage and Sarah is locking it up and he's trying to get to her, to Sarah, you know, says, I know what you are. And she's like, yeah, I'm the one with the keys.
Right.
Maybe I'll give them to Dr. Leakey. So again, do we turn the Prolethians over to the Neolutionists? Like, does that actually solve a problem or not?
Right.
And now Sarah is in her car waiting somewhere. You can hear the banging. It's Helena in the trunk, which we can't totally blame her for wanting to keep Helena tied up for the meantime. And her phone rings and it's Mrs. S. And a little, you know, she says to Sarah, you know, where are you? And Sarah says, I'm about to give Helena to Leakey. And Mrs. S says, you can't. You need to come home with Helena and I'll explain when you get here. And so Sarah drives off and just, you know, a few seconds later, Leakey shows up. So she just missed handing Helena over to Leakey. So she had made that decision, but for some mysterious reason, which we find out at the end, Mrs. S says, no, no, don't do it.
Well, and you can really, I mean, Mrs. S's voice is different.
Yes.
I mean, it's not, you can tell she's concerned and worried and
right,
but not in the normal, oh, I want you to be safe way. Like, there's something going on.
It's a voice that says, don't argue with me now, kiddo.
Yes.
Just do what I say. And Sarah, like, knows that voice different from the, you know, mom trying to look out for her best interest voice. And
right,
she just, without even questioning it, she drives off and she has Helena with her. So the meat of this episode is definitely the Sarah Helena Neolutionists versus Prolethians safety of Kira thread. But still, there's a lot going on with our other clones.
Right.
How do they do this to us? You know, I think that what we've just discussed now is a whole show, in my opinion. And we've probably only scratched, you know, the surface of 30 to 50% of it. Because there's, you know, there's great progress. Well, so let me take that back. there are new developments on the Cosima Delphine front, which I think they don't totally connect to what's going on with Sarah and Helena at this point. Although there is one phone call between Cosima and Sarah right after Kira gets out of the hospital, where Sarah says, you know, could Kira's healing be genetic? And Cosima says, give me some samples.
Yeah.
And Sarah's like, nope.
I'm more worried about scientists than science.
Yes, great line.
I loved that line.
I wrote that down too. Great line. So then Cosima gets a report from Scott, her lab mate, that he's sequenced Cosima and Katja's DNA. And it turns out they are different. And Cosima's like, wow, that's crazy. And Scott, while he's very devoted to Cosima, is a little bit suspicious and says, like, what are you looking for, really? You know, not respiratory disease, I don't think.
Well, and I think he's questioning Cosima, not as, like, he's not in the whole thing, more of as a scientist, mm-hmm. because it's really weird what she had him look for. Like, it's odd and how interested she was and all of those things. I thought that was really, and of course he's full in her web of like do things for me type of stuff.
Yeah.
Until Delphine comes in.
Right.
And just is like so happy to see Cosima and like starts kissing.
Yeah.
And Scott's just like, oh, whoa, okay there.
Yeah.
All right. And it was really funny.
It was a really funny scene. And I think, yes, Scott is one of the devoted helpers of clones, and they should form a support group.
Yes.
He also, he has a thing for Cosima. Obviously, he, especially at this point, he realizes he has no chance with her. But he definitely had a little crush on her, and that's why he was so helpful.
Well, and I doubt that the crush has changed. Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure he still has a crush on her.
Yeah.
Even if he knows there's even less of a chance of them ever getting together now.
Yeah, so then there's a phone call with Cosima and Sarah. I think it's where at this point, Sarah's found out that not only Leaky knows that Beth is not Helena, but Leaky knows of the existence of Sarah, knows her name. And she's sure that it's Cosima who's given the information to Delphine. And she's pissed. And she tells Cosima that, you know, did you ask her, did you do that? You know, he's one step closer to Kira. And so Cosima's confused because she didn't give away any information about the clones to Delphine. She thinks she's got that nailed
safely put away. Yeah.
And she pulls out, you can see her pulling out her briefcase of clone info. And right. She doesn't remember the whole ice cream incident from the night before.
Nope.
Where
nope.
Delphine, you know, conveniently needs to get ice cream and ask her to go out and get it. And so Delphine had free run of the apartment for a certain amount of time. The next time you see them, Delphine is dropping in at Cosima's as planned. You know, can I see you later tonight, as Delphine asked. And Cosima's like, oh, yay. But now she looks pissed. And
so pissed.
Delphine is like, are you okay? And it's one of the most pissed off Cosimas, and it should be, as it should be. She's like, right. Are you? And she just gives her just daggers, looks at her with daggers, and then shows her a website where there are a bunch of people in lab coats, and Delphine is one of them, and Dr. Leaky is another one.
And basically, Delphine has just been lying about everything. She's already a doctor of immunology. She already obviously has known Dr. Leaky. And Cosima is realizing how much she was mistaken, because she thought she had a handle on her monitor when she didn't know nearly as much as she thought.
Right.
And it really, like, I think not only is she mad at Delphine for betraying her, especially because she thinks that she betrayed Kira. But additionally, she's got to be angry at herself.
Yeah.
Because she thought she had a handle on everything, and obviously she did not.
No, that's true. And she says, like, you know, I'm so stupid. I knew it was bull. I still thought you were on my side, though.
And Delphine says, I am on your side. Like, and it makes me, and so I'm sitting here, I'm like, okay, how good of an actor do I think Delphine is? Do I think that she really did it? Like, but then I'm like, okay, she didn't tell Dr. Leaky about Kira. We know that. We know that on the phone, she did not tell about Kira.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes me think that she actually is falling for Cosima, because she's proved the loyalty by keeping back Kira. And it would have been easy enough for her to tell Dr. Leaky about Kira and then just continue on and be like, oh, no, I love you, I'm falling for you type of a thing. So I think Delphine is coming from a place that's really honest and unexpected for her as well.
Yeah, I think it's quite moving when Delphine, you know, when Cosima says to Delphine, how could I possibly believe this? You know, that Delphine's falling for her, truly. And Delphine says, because you feel it. It's not possible. It can't be a lie. I've never been with a woman before. And it's a really touching moment for Delphine, and it seems pretty genuine. And then Cosima just smooshes on it and says, like, yeah,
right.
It showed. Ooh, like, snap.
Oh, yeah. Talk about a dig.
When Delphine says, because you feel it, it's not possible. It can't be a lie. I've never been with a woman before. And at that moment, we definitely believe Delphine. She just, that's not a sneaky lie. That's like a really honest bearing of one's soul. At least it seems like it is. And then Cosima says, yeah, it showed.
I know. Talk about like just a stab to the heart, getting so deep. You could tell like Delphine was just heartbroken.
She leaves and Cosima cries. And that seemed to be the only thing. I guess Cosima just had to be that mean to get Delphine to back off.
Right. Well, and I have a feeling Cosima seems the type, and from what personality things we've seen, is she's going to push people away as deeply and dig as hard as she can in order for her to feel that safety again. That, like, because she was heartbroken. Mm-hmm. She thought she had control of this situation, and all of a sudden she learns that she definitely did not, and all of these lies that were told, and she, I'm sure that that Cosima was also falling for Delphine,
mm-hmm.
and to have that betrayal, it affected her in a way that she wasn't expecting, and so definitely had to push her away as much as possible, as quickly as possible, and as hard and difficult as possible to save her own heart.
So that's the Delphine and Cosima show for this episode. Yes. Breaking our hearts. Meanwhile, Allison is having quite an adventure this episode.
To say the least.
Yeah. Which starts out with her, you know, she's at the hospital with everybody when Kira's been taken in, because of course she had been there with them, and Felix lets her have his keys so she can crash in his apartment. and one of the great scenes of all times is Allison cleaning up Felix's apartment.
Because Allison is the type of personality that when she's stressed, she cleans and organizes. And there was plenty to clean and organize in Felix's apartment.
And they're playing this music that reminds me of like the ambient music from The Sims.
Yes. Oh my goodness, that's so true.
And if there was ever a Sim clone, it's Allison.
Yes.
So Felix comes home. He's like, what the hell? And Allison is explaining to him where all his various paraphernalia has been stored. And then she says, I want to use this apartment as a base. I can't, while I go apartment, you know, hunting myself. And Felix is like, no way. And I need to take a nap. All right. You know, one night. And she says, I need to go back to my house though and pick up some things. Donnie's not going to be there. And he's like, you know, have fun. I'll see you when you get back. Don't wake me up. And she's like, no, I need a wingman. I'm a pariah. And of course, Felix, you know, is talked into it. And
a sucker.
And he says one of his most famous lines I can tell you, in Clone Club going forward is often quoted of him saying, you know, I need to change. Fetch me something gay.
I loved that line. I can totally see why it is a why it was latched on for a Clone Club line, because it's hilarious.
Yeah. And apparently the actor, Jordan Gavaris, just ad-libbed that too. So it wasn't in the script. Fetch me something gay. Yes, there's plenty of animated GIFs with that.
I'm sure.
So they head out to Scarberia and walk into the house, and boom, in Allison's living room are a bunch of neighbors and Donnie and their pastor. And her, I mean, she gasps. Felix is like, what the heck again? And she's like, is this an intervention?
I mean, poor Felix, who gets thrown into this. He thought he was just going to be there for moral support, but no, it's become something so much more, especially when they start doing the, like, full-on intervention,
yeah,
like, mode.
Another great Felix line, though, is, like, he introduces himself and he says, yeah, Felix, gay friend. And Allison is saying almost simultaneously, acting coach. And the pastor says, oh, that's perfectly fine here. And Felix is like, which one? So
yes. And the pastor just continues on.
Right. And they go in. So Donnie starts with the pills and the drinking have to stop. And, you know, all the constant criticism and the abuse. And then the pastor says, like, you can be specific, Donnie. So now it's getting a little salacious. And Donnie talks about, you know, from the stuff from episode 6. You hit, yes, me with a golf club. You burned my chest with hot glue. It still hurts in the shower.
Oh my gosh, I died. I know. And poor Donnie.
And Ainsley, of course, is in full Ainsley mode. You know, you took care, yes, advantage of my husband, and you threatened and insulted me. And what hurts the most, though, is how you turned your back on our friendship.
I did a physical like gag noise, right, when I did that. My eyes could not roll more in my head because, I mean, and we still don't know for sure 100% if that's her monitor or not.
Yeah.
We're still assuming it is, though, which makes it even worse. But even if she's not and is just a friend, it was too much. It was so over the top. But not only that, Ainsley was making it about her.
Yeah.
Not about Allison. And that just makes me angry.
When Donnie says, you know, it's not just us, it's also our kids. Do you want to break up our family? Allison has to exit the room, runs upstairs, and Felix follows her. So next thing you see with them is that neighbors are pounding on the bathroom door. Yeah. I think Ainsley is a great actress. I've said that before. I think those other two neighbors are terrible.
So. Yeah, they're really not best.
No, it's not a great character, it's not a great part maybe, but they just seem like they're really just reading the lines.
Yeah,
and I don't think they add much to it. Ainsley is the show. But so she says, like, I only want to talk to Felix. And you know, the neighbors let Felix into the bathroom, and she's,
and
like,
Felix is preening. He's, yes, just like, yes, she only wants me. It was kind of funny. Well,
I'm the gay friend and acting coach, so of course she needs me.
Right. Well, and you just know that Allison is having a hard time, not just for, like, the fact that it was this huge, like, intervention and stuff, but she doesn't want to divorce Donnie.
No.
She doesn't want to have this be a thing, and the fact that it has had to is hard, and she's just like trying to come to terms with it. She's still having a hard time, even though, like, Sarah was like, well, let's just tell him,
right?
So she knows that, like, she wants to just tell him but also not, and it's just
yeah,
it's all heartbreaking.
So in the bathroom, of course, she's like, she grabs a bottle of pills, and Felix says, hey, like, and you think he's going to reprimand her for pulling out some pills. And then he says, Sharesies. That's another well-known Felix line in Clone Clubdom. So she's like, what am I going to do? While they're both taking the pills, what am I going to do? And it's a great Felix moment because he's just such a great coach. You know, he is kind of the acting coach. He's like, put your chin up, be a woman. This is backstabbing 101. You know, you're going to face the music, eat some humble pie. Ainsley will think she's won, and you're going to live to fight another day. And then it ends with that scene ends with Allison looking in the mirror saying, can you help me get my face on? And Felix says, with pleasure. And we know that,
I love that,
he's good at that. Makeup and everything.
Yeah, he is.
So she goes back down to the intervention, And, you know, the neighbors are all like piling on. And Allison, she does not take Felix's advice. In fact, she
does
just,
the exact opposite. Right?
She reams at Ainsley with saying, you know, from the beginning, you've scrutinized me like I was your own personal laboratory subject. How would you like your life turned inside out? And then starts telling, you know, indiscretions of Chad and Ainsley that all the neighbors are pretending to be shocked about.
Right. And the poor pastor, I'm sure he's just like, wait, what did I get myself into?
Yeah. Well, he said be specific, so I don't feel sorry for him.
No, that's very true. That's very true.
He's trying to get Allison to settle down, and she's like, no, no more words. And then Donnie stands up for her, and he says, she's right, everyone out.
Yeah, I was so proud of Donnie at that point, at that moment. He, like, supported Allison in a way that we hadn't really seen before.
Right.
And it made me happy, because it especially made me happy that maybe they're not going to get a divorce and they can get a happily ever after.
Yeah, it's a turning point for Donnie, even if it's a really small one and it's over very quickly. It's also a turning point for Ainsley, where she just goes full on evil and said, this was your olive branch and you torched it. Huge mistake, yes. Like very threatening. So that was a great scene. It really was basically the continuation of episode 6 with all the crazy potluck party shenanigans.
Right.
That's where it was leading to all along, as an intervention.
Allison just kind of owned it and made it about her, which is the way it should be, and became more sure of herself and less trying to be the sheep and be that perfect person and pretend to be happy, and instead is starting to build the building blocks that will allow her to actually be happy, I think.
Yeah. And Felix is a big part of that. And I think that's a fun relationship to see and to see continue, is how Felix, who said he got hives when he went to the suburbs, right, is helping this suburban housewife break out of her shell.
In a way that is exactly what Allison needs. She needs that gay best friend, the person that's there for her, that's not someone that... Felix is someone that came into the situation later,
mm-hmm,
and is exactly what's needed, because he is there just for Allison. Doesn't care about, you know, the Stepford wives, doesn't care about the neighborhood, doesn't care about any of this, is just there for Allison. And she hasn't had anyone like that.
No, that's true.
Including her husband. Her husband hasn't ever really been 100% on her side. And so this has been the support and foundation that she's needed to become more sure of herself and what she wants.
Yeah. So that takes care of the Felix and Allison show this episode. So we still need to get to the very exciting ending of this show, where 10 things happen, it seems like, all at once. Certainly 3 things that are very, very important to the plot. And we haven't really talked about what's going on the Law and Order clone edition,
right,
side of this episode. So we talked about the ER side, or the Grey's Anatomy side, or whatever you want to call it. But I'm going with ER because I watch more ER than anything
else.
I'm okay with that. But Law and Order, I mean, not Law and Order, but The Precinct, the Art and DeAngelis show. And at this point, you know, we know DeAngelis is very suspicious of Beth, and now she's suspicious of Art, and she's tired of going slow and being careful on this case. They have so much evidence that something weird is going on, and she thinks they should bring Beth in. But Art's like, no, we still don't have the evidence we need. Let's, you know, the lieutenant is even on their back, and Art says, like, give us till the end of the day. And means, he says that to Angie as well, like, we're not going to to arrest Beth until we till the end of the day. And Art calls Sarah, tries to find out what's going on, thinking she's Beth, of course.
Right.
They have this very brief conversation where Sarah tries to just shut him down and says, don't go there. You don't want to go there. You're culpable as well because you helped me cover up the Maggie Chin murder. And Art is then he has nowhere else to go. He decides to go back to the train station. He's where Sarah Manning, in his mind, where Sarah Manning was killed. And he sees the security camera and he starts watching the security video with the guys at the train station. And it shows Sarah and Beth together and Sarah walking over, seeing Beth and then Beth jumping in front of the train. And he knows that's Beth who jumped, like, because he knows Beth.
Right.
And suddenly he realizes he's been tricked all along. And one thing about the scene that surprised me, especially on the videotape, was I didn't realize Sarah was standing that close to Beth when she jumped.
Right.
Did you notice that?
Yeah. The view from the first episode, it doesn't seem like it's that close. But then you see this different vantage point and like she was right there.
Right. I mean, she could have pushed her. I mean, she didn't, obviously, and it shows. Right. But
she could have touched her.
Yeah, she could have touched her. And that brings it to a different level in my mind, like what Sarah saw, that how shocking that must have been, because it would have been like looking in a mirror.
Yeah. And also how shocked Art has to have been, because not only is he kind of discovering that, okay, yes, it was Beth that fell, but also this person that was pretending to be Beth witnessed that death as close. And obviously didn't do anything to affect it, but still, like, was affected by the death in front of her.
Right.
So we go back to the squad room where DeAngelis is, like, laying out all of the data and information for the lieutenant. And Art walks in and is just like, Beth is dead.
Yeah.
And we need to put out a warrant for Sarah Manning. And DeAngelis, her face was just kind of like, crap, I was wrong. I'm not going to get the promotion I think I'm going to get, type of a thing.
Yeah.
It was really funny.
Also, she doesn't get to like rub it in Beth's face.
Right.
Because it's not Beth.
Or Art's. Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing just kind of ruined her plan for the future. And now, like, I don't think she was, I mean, she probably was a little bit sad that it's not, like, Beth is dead, but, like, more so, she's more disappointed that she doesn't get to have this great caller of finding a, you know, corrupt policeman and connecting the policeman to, or former cop to all of these murders and blah, blah, blah.
That is a big moment right at the end. Art now knows that Beth is dead. He doesn't know the clone thing yet, but it's only a matter of time, it seems like.
Right.
Who knows? We don't know how that's going to turn out. There is another little conversation that has a big impact, which is between Leaky and an unnamed person, unknown person, new character, potentially, where when Leaky comes to pick up Helena and Sarah is not there, he takes out his phone, he makes a phone call, and then it shows this woman back to the camera standing in some very fancy office building high rise and saying to her, you know, she didn't bring in Helena. We don't have her. And the voice says of this other new character says, blood is thicker than you think, Aldous. And that's all we see. And so I want to know, what did you make of that scene?
The voice sounded a lot like Tatiana like, so I'm like, okay, is this another clone? Is it the original? Am I completely losing my mind? And it's not like, not Tatiana in a wig. Like, once again, the end of the show and I want to know more.
So yeah, that I forgot how they just dropped that in there kind of casually out of the blue at the end of an episode.
It was so casual.
you expect to see that character in the next episode, I assume.
Yes.
Okay.
If not, I'm going to be angry.
Okay. Okay, so there's a big revelation, potentially. Then, meanwhile, Sarah has gone back to S's house, and she gets introduced to a woman named Amelia, who introduces herself as her birth mother, that she had been the surrogate mother for Sarah on behalf of two scientists in the UK who she was happy to be a surrogate mother, but she felt like something fishy was going on. The medical tests were excessive, and she found out that she wasn't even having this child for these scientists, that they were talking about Neolution and about a child unfettered by tradition, and she just felt like there was a threat to this child that she was carrying, and so she went underground. She hid, and she said, "And I gave birth to the two of you in secret."
And their faces of everyone, what? Yeah. There were two of you?
Yeah, Sarah says, two of us. Amelia says, I knew I couldn't keep you, so I gave one to the state and one to the church. And Sarah says, Helena. And that's the end of the show.
Yes, and oh my goodness.
Well, now I know you texted me the word twins.
Yes.
While you were in the middle of this rewatch, and I was like, what the heck? And then I remembered that, oh yes, this is the episode, I guess, where we find out that Sarah and Helena are actually twins. Not clones. I mean, they are clones.
But they're actually twins.
Yes.
And it now makes sense as to why Helena had that connection with Sarah.
Yeah.
Not just as someone that was actually talking to her, mm-hmm. because none of the others had a chance even to talk to Helena, but because she actually is, like, they shared a womb together, and that's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, I think it's exciting because up until now, the clones have been individually, you know, crafted, and they're all separate from each other. They have no real family relationship except that they all share the same DNA. But Sarah and Helena are truly sisters in the sense that they were in the womb together. I assume that they were identical twins, you know, from the same embryo.
Right.
So they really are connected deeper than just having been
the same genetic material.
Right.
Yeah.
From the same genetic material. So it's an exciting ending cliffhanger because
yes,
Helena doesn't know that yet. Plus there's what's going to happen, you know, on the police side of things. Plus there's this mysterious lady in the office high rise. What else are we? What other cliffhangers does this show give us?
Well, and then how is this going to change Allison's personality and mm-hmm. like and her relationship with Donnie?
Yeah, that's true. We want to see what happens with them.
Yeah,
and we want to find out what happens with Cosima and Delphine. So
yes, all of it. Like a good episode in the middle of a season, it, you know, progresses the storyline and it builds character development and still makes you want to watch the next one desperately.
And of course, the next one is the season finale. So,
okay.
All these things will have to be tied up somehow, or at least tied up into a new cliffhanger for season two.
Great.
I'm exhausted. I think I've said this 10 times since we've started this podcast. How did they fit all that into 43 minutes?
Very, very carefully.
Well, I think we want to get to our episode 10 and season finale as soon as we can. So
yes,
let's put the cap on episode 9. And why don't you let people know where they can find us?
Yeah, you can find us online at sestracast.com. We're also on Twitter at sestracast. Jean is at MacGenie on Twitter, and I am at Mrs. Soup. And of course, we are part of the fantastic Incomparable Network, so feel free to hang out over there, find some more shows that you might enjoy, lots of other television shows that they talk about. Not as good as us, but we're, you know, we're... I'm just kidding, Jason. We love you.
I'll fix that in post.
Yeah. But thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we will see you next week on the season finale.